Cool. Yeah, so I basically set up like a whole like thing on my my tablet here. So I just kind of went up looking at like every Wikipedia and all that stuff. So
okay. Ooh, that's some feedback. Give me 1 second.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I was having a talk with myself. Okay, yeah, I'm weird like that. About boxes and briefs. And I was just, there's something about boxes and, well, boxes and boxer briefs, not actually underwear, just briefs. You know, I call briefs underwear. I don't, you know, everything else I call by their name, like boxers or boxer briefs. And I was thinking, I was just like, okay, boxer briefs are for men that are a little bit thinner who really want to, how should I say this, and not be offensive,
accentuate the goods, maybe.
Yeah, the goods are not long. The goods are like a little clearance sale. You know, yeah. they're kind of short. Then and not to get on the body like that, where I feel like boxes are more comfortable, and for those who are who got a big sale, got a Black Friday sale going on down there, they need room. So, because I got boxer briefs and I got boxers, and I picked up some from Target, the Fruit of the Loom ones, which is actually nice. I actually like the fact that the waistband where it spreads out, it feels like rubber almost. It's very comfortable, and the material they use, the cotton they use, is really nice. Their boxer briefs are not bad neither, but I think I can't do a large. I think I got to do an extra large because I have a Black Friday sale down there. So I know the people who are males listen to this be like, what are you talking? Okay, I know what you just mean right there.
Black Friday sale.
I know there are some people who actually like boxer briefs who are a little bit bigger, and I'm just like, it's not comfortable when you got to move around. Like if you're doing a lot of walking, a lot of lifting and stuff, if the material is not comfortable, it's going to sweat and you're going to get hot from it.
Right. Yeah.
Where I think boxers, you know, allow you to breathe, have like a little bit freedom, a little bit more room.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, like, you know, I usually go boxers myself, you know, not saying I got a whole lot going on down there, but yeah, I haven't heard many complaints. So, but, but yeah, no, it's, you know, you kind of need the space, you know, you need that sort of room down there to, you know, to manage the goods, as I like to put it.
Okay, yeah. And this, because I know I didn't until I got to, I think around 16, that's when I started getting into boxers. Because I was buying Joe boxers at Carson's. So they used to have like a 3 for $10 sale, like 3 pairs of Joe boxers for $10. And sometimes I used to have a little bit of spending money, and I just used to go crazy and just buy Joe boxers.
Nice. Yeah, I usually just get the cheap stuff, the you know, the special at Walmart.
I guess because of me working at a clothing retail store, I got used to wearing good clothes at a cheap price. Some of it wasn't worth it, but most of the time I was just like, okay, I need some good underwear. And I forgot what brand I used to get, but they don't make it no more. So when I started getting back into started getting into more into underwear, just finding what was comfortable for me, I've been going to Target, and I've been trying like different brands and stuff, but Hanes is just, I guess now Hanes is my brand now. And they normally like $15 a pack, you know. But I catch the sale like 2 for $20 and stuff like that. Be like, yeah, let me get that. I think it's weird. I think that's, I don't know. T-shirts are, I think t-shirts are more expensive than underwear. And socks is somewhat close to underwear prices, but it depends on which brand that you're getting for socks.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're getting like some of the decent stuff, yeah, it's, it always seems to be up there in price.
Yeah. It's weird because I used to, let's see, I think for 6 months I did wife beaters, take the little tank top things. I did that for a bit and they ripped too easy. I don't know who could wear this besides people in the South. You see that a lot in the South.
Just hotter weather down there, man. So
yeah,
you have to have something like that.
Yeah, but they wear it like it's a business casual thing. Like it's part of the outfit. Like you'd be like, wait, why do you have that on? That doesn't make okay. And yeah. And all the hair be popping out, and I'm just like, y'all guys, put a t-shirt on, walk around.
Right, yeah.
So, how long did you guys go after I left yesterday for the podcast?
Probably only like another like half hour or so. Didn't go too much longer after that.
Okay.
Kind of just talked about some of the horror movies and, kind of just wrap it up from there.
What did you say for horror movies? Like,
my big ones were always the Dead movies. So the original ones, not the new like remakes. Like they're okay, but the original ones, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. Yeah, that's where it's at. Those are always my favorites. I was a big zombie guy, probably more than the Freddies, the Michael Myers, all that sort of thing.
And what was
go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go.
No, I was just going to say, zombies are always, because it's, you know who the monster is in the rest of them. Like, in zombie movies, they're zombies, but really, the people that are living, those are the monsters. You know, those are the ones that you got to watch out for. So, it was always kind of like that psychological element that I always kind of dug.
And what was the worst that you chose?
the Return of the Living Dead movies. I don't know if you ever seen any of those, but
let's see, the remake when they went to the mall. I think that one came out like in early 2000. That one was good. I like that one.
Dawn of the Dead. Yeah, it was like the remake for that one.
And didn't they do another the original remake of Night of the Living Dead, but that one was in color.
Yeah, they did that one. That was mid-90s sometime, I think.
Because they ended up changing the indie in a way.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I've seen that one. I've seen the original one a thousand times. I've probably only seen like the remake maybe twice, three times, something like that.
Yeah, because they had people coming out shooting the rest of the zombies like at the end. And I think one of them survived or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, zombie movies. I said my piece and I kind of said it quick. I was just like, I'm sorry. Sorry that I'm stopping myself because I'm trying to phrase things without spoiling stuff. Because when I went to go see the Maze Runner, the Scorch Trials, it's a very cliche movie.
Yeah.
It made a real big left turn from the first movie. And it's just like, oh boy, this doesn't make sense. And it got so cliche. I was just like, why? This is some just cliche trite. And I really don't want to spoil it in case people want to go see it. So I won't say much. But what we just mentioned, what we just talked about with horror movies, expect that in the sequel. For anyone who haven't read the books.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of curious how that one, how that one's going to go. So I'll probably still end up seeing it at some point. But yeah, it's good to know that piece of info.
I should have said did you see the House of the Dead?
Oh, House of the Dead.
Yeah. Remember it was that Sega, I think Uwe Boll did it. It was that Sega movie, from the game.
Did I see that one?
It's when they went on that trip to some island. And they was using clips. Man. They was using clips from the first video game.
That's right. I think I did see that, but I think I only saw it like once, and I don't remember it. So I'm kind of assuming maybe it just was not good.
It wasn't good. Oh no.
No. I mean, you know, I mean, movies based on video games are usually they're not going to be that great.
Well, I think it depends on the director. Because I can admit the first and second Resident Evil movies were good. They were decent. I mean, yeah. They're not bad. And then whatever happened to the other ones was just like, I think the last Resident Evil movie was just like, what the world is going on? Oh, okay. Shots.
Kind of almost like a paint yourself in a corner sort of idea, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, in all fairness, the Resident Evil games, I kind of feel kind of did the same thing. Like, you know, you got a virus that, you know, turns into zombies, and they're making this virus better. So,
right.
How far can you go? And then they're not zombies anymore, so you kind of lose the zombie feel. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, it's almost kind of, okay, where do we go from here?
And I know, someone did a study about zombies, like if they actually happen in the real world, they're just like, you really don't have to do nothing but just stay away because they'll die on their own.
Yeah, actually, because they actually did. I don't know if you ever read the Zombie Survival Guide.
Is that one by Pat Oswin?
Oh man. Maybe? I can't remember what the author's name is now.
I heard about it, but I haven't read it yet.
It's the same guy that that also wrote World War Z, where the original book was amazing. The movie with Brad Pitt, garbage.
I don't even know. I fell asleep and don't know what the heck, which is like, wait, huh?
Yeah, that was really not good. But the Zombie Survival Guide was basically written almost like a military style guide on how to basically what you got to do to survive in the zombie apocalypse, and like it, you know, at what stages does it get worse and worse? Like you know, full blown, like say like Walking Dead is like full blown like stage four zombie infestation.
Okay.
I forgot where I was going with this there. I had a point.
I mean, when talking about letting the zombies die off by themselves.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that was the whole idea is that, you know, one of the things I suggest is, you know, get to, like, certain regions. So, say, like, out in the desert, you know, sandstorm, stuff like that. If the zombies do end up, like, following you in there, you know, they won't last long there because the sand will just tower them up. But then you got to worry about, like, infection, being out in the desert. One of the big things is in like colder regions, you know, when it does get like down to like freezing temperatures, you got to watch out for, you know, when it's when they start thawing out. So you got to like kind of keep track of time frame for that. It's really kind of interesting, actually. I kind of almost wish that more zombie movies would kind of read that first and kind of like base the entire movie around that. It's kind of, I mean, it's written as fiction, but if you had that book in the zombie apocalypse, you'd be in pretty good shape.
but wouldn't you think that zombies will kill themselves? Because the reason why I say that is because they seem to react to, for some zombies, I guess, sound.
Yeah, and that was something they kind of touched upon in there is how, you know, depending on, like, how they really are able to see. Like, in the book, I think the main idea that they took was it's almost kind of like a sense that it can sense, like, heartbeat and living, so it knows to go towards that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
But wouldn't they be brain dead?
Well, yes. Because, I mean, essentially they're all dead, but the virus itself takes over the brain is kind of how they describe it. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of like what kind of zombie lore you really want to
So now it gets questionable because it's just like, okay, how does a virus in a dead body that's supposed to be controlling the body, is it controlling the five senses too? Because it's just like that. I'm like, it shouldn't be able to control the five senses.
No. And then like the example in that is, it basically is able to control like motor function and somehow extrasensory. I'm trying to remember now how exactly it works, but you know, I mean, I guess it also depends a lot on the lore that you want to use. I mean, I know I've heard in some zombie scenarios that, you know, it still uses the eyes that, you know, still be able to see. But over time, of course, there's nothing that's, you know, keeping it from, like, you know, regenerating itself. So eventually, you know, the eyes decay out and they can't see anymore. So they're just kind of more or less aimlessly, you know, just aimlessly wandering around, basically.
So my question is, since you've been watching a lot of zombie movies, probably more than I have, are zombies not able to smell each other, but there's a scent that living humans give off that attracts them to eat?
You know, in some things I've heard, yes. Like, I believe, like, actually, like, in Walking Dead, I think it's also in the comics and on the TV show, for example. Yeah, they're able to basically still be able to smell. I mean, it's considered to be one of the strongest senses that you have is smell.
Right.
So, kind of, I think the idea is that, you know, what they use. In Walking Dead, there's been a couple times where they actually just wipe, like, blood and guts and everything, like, all over their body to kind of mask their scent. Actually, that Michonne, you know, one chick with the katana. That's basically like one of her techniques is that she'll, you know, kind of bathe herself in some blood, chain up a couple of zombies, cut off their arms and you know, mouth, so they basically just can't attack or can't even do anything, and just walk along them like she's walking the dogs, and then, you know, she could walk in zombie hordes by doing that.
I just find it so weird when it comes to, I guess, zombie logic. I know you're not supposed to go half any and just be like, these people are going to do stupid stuff. They're supposed to run and fall and get eaten, basically. And two of the main characters or the stars of a said movie are supposed to survive or will be killed off in the end. And then some stupid twist will happen.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just a lot has to do with just how, you know, however they work their zombie lore. I mean, that's kind of the nice thing about zombies is you can really kind of write them a million ways. You know, there's, you know, the fast one, like 28 days later. There's, you know, slow walking ones from like Night of the Living Dead. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of just a lot of open-endedness for you to kind of do whatever. I mean, was it in the Return of the Living Dead movies? They essentially couldn't even be killed. They cut the head, you know, kind of thinking, oh, well, in the movies, you could just cut off the head and the zombie's dead.
Right.
But not the case. It's still, you know, the body stops working because the brain's been severed from it, but the head's still chomping away. I mean, they even tried cremating it. It basically just kind of made like an acid rain that, you know, that rained over a cemetery, and all of a sudden you got a crap ton more zombies.
And that's weird. I guess that's weird with zombie movies is that there's never a explanation of how it started, and there's never an explanation of a cure. Like, how do you create a virus to bring back someone back to life that would be able to control your senses? Like, how can you make a virus that would do that?
Well, you know, there's actually some, like, a little bit of scientific sort of stuff on that. Like, I don't know if you ever played the game Last of Us.
Yeah, I have it for PS3. I'm somewhat working through that, but
Yeah, because I have not played it myself, but I do know kind of a little bit of the background is that it actually kind of takes on the idea that there's a virus that kind of affects like spiders and crabs and other kind of creatures like that,
mm-hmm.
Where it'll actually like mutate them and basically kind of take over their brains and their bodies. And I guess there's also like something similar that will do the same with like ants and like other like small like ground insects.
Yeah.
So I mean, I know like Last of Us, the whole idea was that whole virus evolved from, you know, to that to be able to affect humans. So I mean, that's how you have like the clickers and you have the ones that are just kind of going insane because it's kind of in between process of you know, kind of early stages of you know, becoming fully controlled. So yeah, I mean, I guess there's a little bit of scientific basis on it, but I mean, nothing that's, you know, evolved to the point where it could affect humans, basically.
But I wonder why stuff like that is never explained. They're like, you just see one and bam, the movie or TV show or video game or whatever just starts happening. Like even if they put in clues and stuff, the clues that you get never match up to why all of this started in the first place. Because I think that's why the problem that I have with The Walking Dead with the first season was just like, okay, you know, watching what's going on, and then at the last episode with him being in the hospital and then getting to the facility, and I guess it's explaining stuff. It was just like, this doesn't seem right. It just felt weird.
Yeah, it's because I think like in Walking Dead, it was kind of explained, yeah, it's a virus, everybody has it, so basically just when, you know, you die, you turn, basically. But hey, you know what? It, you know, it could just be kind of a plot device too. Just you know, things are scarier when you don't understand them, basically.
But I wonder who they explained in the first in the sixth episode in the first season who developed it, right?
I think so. I have to rewatch it, but yeah, I remember. You know, sorry, spoiler alert for anybody who has not seen this. But yeah, very early on in the season, like, yeah, when they get to like that CDC building, he kind of explains, I think he even explained that, I think it was something that was man made, that kind of got out of their control, I believe.
Okay. Cause I know they was in a facility and they met up with one of the scientists, I guess, who was experimenting, and then it got out of control. And then I stopped watching the series after that because it was just not, yeah.
It seems Walking Dead, because I remember, you know, I have a discussion with my brother about this all the time because he's a big, you know, big time fan of the comic book, but he hates the TV show. But he hasn't really got too far in the TV show because it's kind of interesting. Because in the beginning, yeah, basically all these characters, in the beginning, they are absolutely stupid. They, you know, they're kind of thinking, oh, we're just going to hide a little bit and then this is all going to blow over and, you know, we don't really have to, you know, worry too much.
Right.
But then they find out in fairly quick order that they're completely wrong. And, yeah, a bunch of them have to die off just to be able to learn that lesson pretty much. So.
Which is weird. It was just like, isn't anyone just going to try to get into a house and, you know, make sure they got a lot of food in the house and just stay in and lock the doors?
It's they try it. I mean, there's been a couple of times. I mean, at one point they try to hunker down in a prison. They try to start growing that up. You know, they fortify that. And it works for a little while. But it's, you know, one of the big things is that it's not a permanent solution. You know, it's... You have to deal with, you know, kind of going back to the whole, like, psychological element. Like, zombies aren't the real monster in a zombie anything because it's other humans. I mean, they probably would have stood a pretty good chance in the prison had it not been for, you know, I'm trying not to spoil it for people who are catching up on Walking Dead. But there are other human elements, very much alive elements, that are just very evil and very, you know... vengeful. They want the resources that the others have, you know, and kind of go on the theory that, you know, some people just can't let other people be happy.
I always wondered, would you want to live in a house that's solar powered during a zombie apocalypse?
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, if you had a good enough solar power panel and stuff like that, you could probably stay going quite a while. I mean, especially if you got like radio equipment that you can power. Depending on how your setup is. I mean, if you're cool just using like propane tanks and stuff like that, you might be able to get away with that for a little while. But power to us humans nowadays is very important, so you could you quite a bit with that.
Would you let's say we get to a Barnes & Noble or a Borders or some kind of bookstore. And, you know, we're safe from the zombies. They're not coming to anything. What books would you grab? Like, I know for me, I would try to grab, like, engineering book. Or try to grab something that will help you make traps. That it takes resources, but it will make sure that the zombies won't come in. Like, they'll fall in the trap and die automatically. Because I guess when I dream, sometimes I have these weird dreams that I'm making these contraptions. And my traps help keep the energy running in the place that I'm staying at. So the more that the zombies come and fall into the trap, the more their deaths are giving me energy. And I have solar power in case they stop coming.
Yeah, there you go. Like, like steam powered.
Yeah.
Just burn up the zombies for the fuel for the fire.
Yeah. Or do something like with food. So what books would you get? Or if you could carry some books.
Jeez. Wow. Yeah. I mean, you got a lot of different things there. I mean, I know they have, definitely survival books, of course, because, a lot of those, because at some point, hey, you may have to evacuate out of there. So having something that's like wilderness survival would definitely come in handy. Even just like, I think I would probably go more towards like anything like wilderness survival, like identifying plants as edible or poisonous, because that will be important. Just general first aid type stuff. I mean, yeah, it's you got a lot of open-endedness in there. I mean, if you're living in a Barnes & Noble, you got some time to do a little research.
Now, have you ever yelled at a movie, like a zombie movie, like, because they did something stupid? Like, why would the director or the writer have you run through this hallway or the set path? And I know we know there's a chance that you're going to die or a chance you're going to get killed. But have you ever yelled at them to, like, grab something that's, like, if you're in a room that's full of stuff, like, have you ever yelled for them to grab something and at least try to fend themselves off?
You know, I think if somebody says that they've never done that, I have to say that they're a dirty liar. Because I think at one point or another, I think anyone's watching the movie, yeah, I think it's probably kind of been like, what are you, stupid? Really? You're going to pass that up? I mean, even just like something makeshift, it's you need something. I mean, I guess it's just horror movies in general always seem to have that. Like, it's okay. There's no way out going up the stairs. Why are you going that way? What are you, stupid? Come on.
Well, yeah. Like, I think even when I was thinking about Friday the 13th, like, okay, if you see somebody dead and they're reporting it, wouldn't you just shut down and be like, okay, I'm on the first thing out of here?
Like, yeah, I mean, like if there's like some like brutal murder in the area, yeah, I might consider, I'm out, click. Put that gun in my mouth and end it.
Well, no, I'm not going to kill myself. I wouldn't say that. No. But wouldn't you just want to leave the camp, like not return, like go back home?
Oh, does Yvette? Yeah, I'm out.
You know, because
that would be if that was an option, yeah, definitely. Like, oh really? Everyone's getting brutally murdered? Yeah. See you guys.
Because everybody be like, well, Jan's been gone for the last 5 hours. We're not going to search for Jan. Jan is probably dead or kidnapped. If Jan better find a way to get back here. If she don't, she on her own. Like, I would bounce. I'm sorry. Jan, I'm not waiting for you. I'm up.
Yeah, you're on your own. I'm out.
Because I'm just like, you didn't even have to go into the woods to do what you needed to do. You could have been a grown person or be an adult and get your freak on somewhere. Because I don't know, what is it about getting freaky in movies or in horror movies? Like, why is that such a cliche, like something that's needed?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's seeing boobs softens the blow of the fact that they're going to get brutally murdered about 30 seconds, I guess.
But don't you even pay attention to it? I'm like... Oh, okay. She taking off her shirt.
You know, I think in horror movies, kind of cliche, like, oh, there's her tits. She's gonna be dead. It's like, almost like that's the dead giveaway.
Like, but do you think it's ever needed in a horror movie?
No, but you know, I guess neither is the gratuitous violence. So it's almost like, eh, what the hell? We're throwing some boobs. Why not?
Like. It's kind of hard to have a love interest in a horror movie. I just find it so off. Just like, no, it doesn't make sense.
It's almost kind of like The Mark. You know, it's a, okay, well, we know one of you is going to die because otherwise there's not much of a plot.
True. And I guess now it's separate. Because movies and video games are two separate medias, I think. And, you know, with Resident Evil, Silent Hill, Ghosts and Goblins, even though that's not horror. But, you know, Friday the 13th by LJN. Oh, goodness, why did they do that? The Nightmare on Elm Street. And it's just like horror and games. Even Until Dawn, everybody said that Until Dawn is really good. It's like it brought that horror feeling back. That can't be B-movie horror feeling. And The Evil Within, you know, brought that that horror feeling too. It feels like with horror games and survival horror, that genre, it just feels that there's not much to it. It's like action, solve a puzzle, beat the final boss, end. It's very linear that way.
Yeah, like, you know, they almost kind of try to blur the lines a bit. Like on, you know, like some of the Resident Evils. You know, that almost kind of does that movie feel. But, of course, you know, you're playing, you're in charge of what's going on, of course. But, yeah, they definitely have, like, almost kind of a... Or they try to at least have, like, kind of a, like a movie feel to it. I don't think they've ever really been able to do a game that's really been able to, like, kind of blur the lines. I mean, I think, like, Until Dawn, I've not played it yet.
Uh-huh.
A lot of stuff that I've seen on it. Looks like that probably is about as close as they've gotten. I mean, maybe, like, Walking Dead by, like, Telltale probably... is kind of as close as they can kind of get to completely blurring the lines.
And I know they're doing the Friday the 13th game. They're bringing it back. Yeah. This one independent company was going to do like a horror game, a camp kind of horror game. And the guys who are in charge of Friday the 13th, they seen what they was up to and called them and worked something out with them. So they're now making the next Friday the 13th for a video game. It's like, I think they got a Kickstarter for it. But they just like show like some of the environments. They haven't shown like gameplay or they haven't even showed Jason yet and stuff like that. So I don't know how that's going to play out or anything like that.
Interesting.
You know, like, have you ever played Friday the 13th on the NES or seen anything about it?
Oh, man. I think I have. It's been a while, but yeah, I think I have actually played that.
Okay. Who in the world throws rocks at Jason?
Oh, man. Yeah, that was, like, the worst idea ever. I do remember that part.
And
like, yeah, that's... Ugh.
You couldn't jump off the boat, so Jason would come in and just, like, hit you with whatever. And it's just like, wait, what?
It's... Yeah, I think that really kind of came from a generation where... You know, it's, you know, we gotta make a game. We'll kind of add these elements from the movie, and we'll kind of just kind of give it the Friday the 13th name. But yeah, like, I think even kind of the Jaws game kind of had that, because I mean, I think you were like in the Jaws game, you were like hunting multiple sharks at one point. Like you had like a little submarine, you go underwater and stuff like that. It was kind of almost kind of thrown together and given the Jaws name,
right?
So it's from what I remember of Friday the 13th, kind of had a lot of that feel.
I know A Nightmare on Elm Street is probably like the best one out of them, of the licensed one, because that Back to the Future game was terrible. RoboCop was terrible. That was by Ocean. Total Recall was horrible. I think that was by Acclaim. Yeah, I think only Friday the 13th was the only good NES kind of... I mean, the Goonies 2 is okay, but we never got part 1, and that was just a weird Metroid-style game. That was very weird.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think... when it comes to... Like, I'm struggling to think of something that could be better, but... Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that probably was the better of the licensed products out there.
I don't... Of course, a lot of licensed games haven't come out recently besides Disney. But, you know, Disney own those movies. They own their own movie and have their own video game company. Or division, I should say. So, yeah. You know, that's different. You know, you just stop seeing stuff like that. Definitely with Konami. Konami was really big, and we'll probably talk about that in the main episode when we get to arcades. You know, Konami was big on licensed products. You know, Ninja Turtles, X-Men, The Simpsons. Like, they had the beat 'em up genre on lock because, you know, their art style really mimicked the comic or the cartoon show that they were showing.
That's true, yeah, because, like, I mean, even, like, the Ninja Turtles game on Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that game was amazing.
But I mean, it was hard. The first one was hard. The second one was...
It was really hard. Yeah, that was, brutally tough. Like, I just remember, like, going through the, just, like, even, like, the swimming part.
Yeah. Well,
swimming parts in just about every video game are just the bane of existence, really. But yeah, I mean, you know, just hitting some of those, I don't even know what they call, but you get too close to them, they, like, electrocute you.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, it's, But yeah, I think that's probably one of the better ones, one of the better ones that's out there.
I know the biggest one that I got, well, no, not the biggest, the farthest I got in that game was, I got to the Technodrome, and then I died.
Oh, yeah, jeez. I'm trying to remember, because, like, I remember, because at the time, I did not have a NES at the time, so the way I was playing it was on PC, because they did, like, a whole, like, PC version of it, which was, like, super broken. I mean, it was glitchy, like, you know, like, the first boss you could play as, you know, come Donatello, I think it was it Rocksteady, I think, in the beginning? Just climb up, like, at the higher part, and you didn't even have to be facing him. You could just be, like, just ducking and doing the down attack.
Yeah.
And you'll hit him as long as he was hugging that wall.
Yeah.
It was
because, yeah, but, you had Donatello, you had the bow. And he was just coming to jump.
Was great.
Did they add Bebop in that one?
I think so, because I think, like, the first level, I think you fought Bebop as the boss.
Okay.
And I think the second one, I think you fought Rocksteady, if I recall.
It does still have some of the best music. I don't know. Konami, the NES has some like really good 8-bit inventive music.
Oh yeah, yeah. That I think just there was a lot of games. I think like just the music itself. I remember, like, you know, like it was yesterday. Like better than I can remember. Like a lot of the music from today. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, me and my friend Johnny was talking about that. Or no, I think no. Me and Adrian, my friend Adrian, we was talking about that. That the music now for modern games you can't remember like you can for the 8-bit and 16-bit and some of the 32-bit era. Like some of the music now kind of doesn't stand out. Besides, to me personally, besides Nintendo, some of their games. Have their live soundtracks are really good, but it's nothing like appealing to me when I hear stuff.
You know, it's interesting because like Borderlands, like you know, a lot of the music on that is pretty good. You know, in all fairness, but I don't think I would recognize that for as many hours as I put into Borderlands. I don't think I would recognize a lot of that music had I heard it outside of the game, as I would say, you know, Tetris on Game Boy or. Right. You know, Super Mario 3 or, you know, like, just about any of them. Like, I mean, if you kind of gave me, like, a sound test and just start playing, like, random video game songs, the older it is, the more chance I'm probably going to recognize it, like, right away.
And I wonder if younger gamers now who play games, would they even remember the music now? Or would they remember just the moments that they did, like, in Call of Duty or something like that?
You know, it's I kind of afraid for gamers nowadays, honestly enough. Like, you know, I remember just like, you know, my nephew, he loves his Call of Duty. And I'm like, dude, there's like 100 games better than this game here. But yeah, I don't even think he would even remember the music. You know, he might remember the level, but, you know, he probably couldn't identify the music. Probably not. Probably not a lot he would remember from it outside the game, honestly enough.
I wonder what it would take for him to play something else other than Call of Duty.
God, realistic graphics and all that. I tried to get him to play Borderlands with me one time, and he's like, "This graphics suck." And I'm like, "You shut your mouth."
I'm like,
yeah, because, you know, I'm always big on, you know, graphics don't make a game. You know, if graphics made the game, we wouldn't have video games today, because it had to start somewhere, and it had to start really bad. You know, not bad, I shouldn't say that, but it had to start really low tech to get to where we are today, you know?
Right.
And a lot of kids don't realize that. It's, you know, I guess I kind of feel like how, you know, probably like a lot of, you know, parents now, you know, kind of looking back on several things, like, you know, try to describe it. Like, you know, when you're younger, you know, parents try to expose you to, like, say, like, their music, stuff like that. When you're younger, you listen to that stuff, and you're like, this is crap. Give me, you know, Fall Out Boy or whatever. You know, I don't know what's common or what's current nowadays, but, you know, you kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and to me, I can listen to any kind of music. Like, I listen to my parents' music, and I listen to my generation music, and I even listen to the music of now. Even though, like rap, like a lot of rap, I have a really hard time listening to.
And yeah, new school. Like, I'm a fan of a lot of rap music. You know, as much as, you know, random white kid can be, but no, it seems like, yeah, the newer stuff, it's really kind of garbagey. I mean, it's more just kind of made to be appealing to, you know, the 12-year-olds that don't really know any better, that don't really know where, you know, that came from.
Yeah, it just sounds, to me personally, it sounds sloppy and it sounds lazy. Just, let's see, I think last year or no, 2013, I actually put it on my Facebook page. I was just like, that's it, WGCI. I'm not listening to your station ever again. When you got songs like On My Mama and 75% of the songs are all sound the same and like they all bleeped out. And I'm just like, I can't listen to this no more.
Yeah. The latest rapper to come on the scene that I think actually has, like, any skill whatsoever, off the top of my head, I would have to say is probably Eminem, honestly.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of, like, one of the last ones that actually had skill. Because, I mean, you get, like, Iggy Azalea is considered to be a rapper. I know.
I could say this with Iggy. I could actually listen to her album. Her album is really good. I heard a lot of her songs. And, you know, a lot of people be like, well, she's not very lyrical. She's just trying to use the stuff. I'm just like, Iggy Azalea is kind of better than most black rappers nowadays. That's on the radio. Because I'm just like, I can listen to her. I mean, I can listen to her, get a feel for her, and, you know, whether you like it or not, you know, it's listenable. When I can't even hear your single because it's all bleeped out, and then when I actually hear the original version, it sounds horrible.
Yeah, what happened to the flow? You know, what happened, you know, before it was more like like poetry, you know?
Right.
I can't describe it.
I'm like, they want to repeat it. They want it. It just sounds bad. And I got mad at WGCI because I feel like them as a radio station it's not the DJs or people for like that. Because they, you know, they got to play the hot stuff. I'm like, none of this is hot. And none of it is pleasurable because it's funny that you could hear One More Chance by Notorious B.I.G., the remix. And then you'll hear something like from Drake or Kevin Gates or whoever. And you just be like, ugh, and just end up turning it. Like, you could hear the difference of, like, 90s rap in early 2000 compared to, like, 2013 and 15 and you know, just, like, this modern rap. And I can understand Kendrick Lamar. You know, he got some rhymes. He got some good songs. I can't hate him on that. You know, I'm lucky that there's Slaughterhouse, like Joe Budden, Royce da 5'9", Crooked Eye, and Joel Ortiz, because they come with the rhymes. The beat is the beat, but they gonna come with the rhymes. And that's what I like to hear, you know?
Yeah, it's at this point now, I guess, you know, rap's been around for so long that now I almost kind of feel old that it's like, you know, you kind of almost have that feel now.
I mean, and I can understand this is the type of music that the radio station is playing. People find that this is hot and stuff. But I'm just like, this makes you feel like you have an IQ of -5.
You know, it's I want the radio to have, like, you know, they have classic rock stations, like,
yeah,
God, I'm gonna make myself sound old. Yeah, you know, they should have, like, classic rap stations. Why not? Like, you know, kind of going back, you know, more like Tupac, more, you know, more Biggie, more, you know, like everything back when.
Yeah, like, why not? Well, that's probably Sirius XM, you know, going
true.
It's just weird because I just wish it was better when it comes to hip hop music. I kind of just wish, like, be more creative, you know, make New York hip hop sound New Yorkish, make the South sound like early Ludacris stuff, you know, or early Outkast. Like, you guys could do this, like the producers and stuff. Whatever skill they have, I think they need to work on it. I think they need to listen to different genres. I feel like if you are a producer, go to an opera or go to an orchestra and just hear them play and just get ideas and feel creative and stuff. Don't just use a drum machine and a piano and just be like, this is the hottest beat. Well, you took 15 minutes to make it. I know, but it's going to... I'm like, spend some more quality time with your work. That's how I feel sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's... You know, I think kind of the feel I get nowadays that, you know, a lot of rappers, you know, they're talking about, like, all the money they already have. Because, you know, the money that they have is basically, like, you know, the advancement bonus that they get for... you know, signing a record deal.
Right.
You know, back in the day, it's, you know, more of a, you know, it, you came from bad situations, and that kind of gave your inspiration to be able to do well and to work hard and to, you know, to make it happen.
And I believe there was just storytelling. There was just better, yeah. Like some of the songs, like Slick Rick. Like, me and my sister was going to work, and they played Lottie Dottie, I think not Rick the Ruler, the lullaby story or something, where the little boy's just like, come, hey, Uncle Rick, tell me a story. And, you know, once upon a time, not long ago, where da 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 da, living life slow, you know, like Slick Rick was that storyteller.
Yeah.
You know. Oh. Even LL Cool J, when they play I Need Love, and I'm just like, whoa. If they start playing JJ Fast Supersonic, I'm just be like, yeah, I'm going to just pull my car over and just chill. I'll be late to work. Like,
God, yeah.
And it's like, for me, I even just been going to the pop stations, like B96 and KISS FM, 103.5 KISS FM. Like, I've been listening to them more, and like 102.7, like, I've been listening to them more than the black stations.
You know what? Because, like, you know, I've got a daughter, because usually my go-to is usually, like, metal, rock music, you know, hard rock. So, like, 95 Will Rock is my usual like go to.
They're like, rock is good to listen to at night. I used to do a lot of classical, but I'm like, if I'm on a long drive and I'm not listening to podcasts or something, I actually throw in a rock album.
Yeah, you know, because you know, especially like at night, it you know, keeps you hyped. It's
right.
Yeah, you know, it feels. It just feels right. I mean, I can't really think of a better way of putting it, is that it just kind of, that's, you know, you could, you know, like rap music, you know, hip hop, stuff like that. You can kind of cruise to that like any time of day, but
right.
You know, rock music, like when you're listening to that at night, you know, that's your night, man. I mean,
right. I think it has something with me. It just has something to do with, just the songs in the moment, just being in that moment and stuff, and just hearing that like particular rock song. Because sometimes there's just art. I think rock definitely for me is like artists I've never heard, and people are just like, you never heard this artist? I'm like, no. If it didn't come up on MTV, I know none of them.
Yeah, that's kind of the beauty thing about like, yeah, like 95 Real Rock, is that it, you know, a lot of those that they put on there, you know, there's. I think the smaller the radio station, the better quality music you get. Because, I mean, they're just like a, you know, little station, like out of Pleasant Prairie, I think they're out of. So, you know, they do basically everything from like Milwaukee, Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're small. I mean, they're not like some of the bigger ones, like, I know, like Star 105, or not Star, what, oh, damn. You know, there's some of those bigger ones that are, you know, played everywhere. You know, I think they got to try it, and you know, I mean, it's kind of where some of that crappy music comes from, because they have to play a lot of that watered down kind of derivative crap just to kind of try to make everybody happy, whereas
sometimes that stuff is good too, to me personally, because I just feels like there's something about the arrangements that sometimes stand out that sounds good, like the chord changes and just the arrangement. It sometimes stands out than the words itself that I like.
Yeah. Like, you know, because at the very least, it's made to be, you know, catchy and,
right.
You know, something's going to stick with you for a while. So even if it's not, like, the best written, you know, it's still memorable.
Yeah. And yeah, I could agree. I think my first rock album that I actually bought was Alien Ant Farm when they first came out.
Oh man, their cover of Smooth Criminal.
Yeah,
oh, man. I'm pretty sure I probably still have that like on my MP3.
Yeah, I got it on my iTouch. And then movies, but then I literally, like when they came out, I think 2003, probably, I think so. Around that time, I had my Sony Walkman with my Sony headphones. And I played that CD a lot. It was only like $10 when it first came out. Got it at Sam Goody. And I think it was just like one song I didn't like. And then their second album came out. And their second album was kind of better than their first in a way. Like, I could take more songs off their second album than I can on their first. But then they left. They disappeared. But I think they're somehow back. I think they got another. They did a third album. They went back independent. But I haven't had a chance to hear it and stuff.
I think Alien Ant Farm is one of those bands that's just like on tour like all the time. So right. When they get out an album, it's like once every couple of years when they actually get time where. Like the small time between tours, basically, because Gwar's a lot like that too. I'm a big Gwar fan when it comes to like metal like that, and I think it's been like 2 or 3 years between their last album that they just put out, the one before it, because I mean they're just constantly on tour, so I guess some bands are just like that. They just they make more money off tours, so why not?
That is true. It was funny. I came known to Puddle of Mud before I bought the album is that I heard Blurry in a movie theater, and I'm just like, what in the world is this? And then I found the name of it, and I'm just like, okay, I need to buy this album.
Yeah, Puddle of Mud. I'm trying to remember because I think for me. There was like one good song, and I'm like, "Oh, this band's pretty awesome. I should go check them out." And I Blurry. Maybe I bought one. I can't remember if I bought the CD or not, but I just remember hearing it, thinking like, "I can't believe I just spent money on the rest of this album."
I think the rest of the album is kind of not off-putting, but it just feels like it didn't mix with like Blurry. But I mean, it's a decent album, and it was their debut album. For me personally, and I didn't get their second album, but yeah. And then now that I go to the Half Price Bookstore, I get like, weird rock albums that I would never get from like bands I never heard of. Sometimes they're 50 cents, sometimes they're $2. It just depends. There's one band called Number One Fan, and they were from Madison, Wisconsin. The album was called Confessions or Confessional. It's a really good album from start to finish. Like you could probably hear the whole album on YouTube or something, but it's really good. Like Make the Cut is like one of my favorite songs on the album.
If you're at Half Price Books, here's a band to look for, because I don't know if you remember Methods of Mayhem. It was Tommy Lee's I guess it was kind of considered to be like his solo project. A lot of like heavy metal, a lot of rap, a lot of like hard rock. I don't know, something about that CD. Like, it's one of those that you could listen to like all the way through. And of course, it's Tommy Lee, so basically all he's talking about is just sex and drinking and partying and stuff like that. I mean, there's a whole song. I'm trying to think. It had a bunch of people on it. Remember Lil Kim was on it. Yeah, Get Naked.
yeah, that's it.
Oh, man. Oh, that was a crazy video, too. Looking for that one.
Speaking of crazy videos, the one song that I ever actually heard from a country singer is called That Badunkadunk or something. She got a hunk of junk, but dunk a dunk. I'm like, wait, what? I seen them like on a country music TV, CMT, and I stopped doing what I did, sat down, watched it, and laughed. Which is like, what is this garbage?
There's a lot of country music now that's coming out that it looks like rap videos almost. It's kind of crazy. It's like that, it's kind of like crunchy singers have been like starting to bite kind of that sort of style.
Right.
I mean, even like my wife's a big fan of the show Party Down South, which if you haven't seen it, is basically Jersey Shore, but with rednecks.
I heard about it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, it's everything you would imagine that being given that description. But a lot of the music they have in that, it's like country music, but almost kind of laid out like with rap beats, rap styles, stuff like that. It's really kind of weird almost.
Is it good?
Like, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Check it out once or twice. I mean, it's a, of course it's, you know, you can't really watch it too much because you actually feel your intelligence level dropping. But yeah, it's kind of weird, kind of interesting how they do that now, actually.
Wow, I haven't watched reality TV in such a long time. Or reality scripted TV? I don't know how you
want to quote reality, quote unquote.
Right. Like, I was big in the real world. Like, watching New Orleans, New York, the Boston one. Like, I was big into it when Eileen got smacked by the black dude.
Oh, yeah. Because she actually came out and, like, yeah, dude, like, yeah, you're gay. And he didn't like that. But then later on, they had a whole big, like, reunion where it was, like, every episode or every, like, season's people from that. And he came back. He's like, yeah, I came out as being gay. Like,
he,
I mean,
did?
She knew.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I think he actually, like, came to, like, the whole big event because it was, like, a big party that they were filming for it.
Okay.
And, yeah, he actually, like, I think actually, like, came with his boyfriend.
Wow. Because I forgot what they even got into. Like, where they argue. But she needed to leave because she was just born in the first place.
She had I forgot what she had. She had some sort of illness that was also affecting how she was acting.
Yeah.
Because I remember that. Because that was almost kind of like the real turning point. Because I don't think they even, like, really got into anything big.
Right.
But then she just kind of dropped that bombshell and was just like, dude, you know, I'm not mad at you or something like that. And, like, but, you know, because I know that you are gay. And he flipped his shit over that. That's all I remember from that is that, like, he just kind of, like, freaked out. Like, you know, he didn't really even give any sort of, like, explanation on it. But that's why, like, he stopped her, like, the slapper, because he was, like, throwing, like, all the crap around the house. Like,
right.
Oh, you think I'm gay? Oh, psh. Like, super kind of overreacting by today's standards.
Right. But it was good TV. And because he got sent home from that, like, I think two episodes after that, they made a decision to send him home.
Yeah, I think so.
I remember in New Orleans, the black dude from Chicago, the singer, that mug was like muscle. I'm like, dang. And then the Asian looking girl, you know, they had the problems. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to make it up. And they went out for her birthday party, and he stripped for her because she was drunk, and she loved it. And then they hugged and made up. I was just like, wow. New Orleans was good, and Hawaii was good.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I've been watching so much of it, like, throughout my life. Mm-hmm. I remember, I think one of the first seasons I seen was with Puck, you know. Which one was that one? That was, like, the third one in.
Yeah. Because Mel B was on, well, I think it's Mel B, because she was a New York rapper who actually had a CD out, because they was in New York when they first came out, I think, when they did it. San Francisco was maybe the second one. It might have been the second one, because Puck and the Mexican gay dude who ended up dying because he had AIDS, Puck was on that one.
Yeah,
because they got rid of Puck. Because of his harassment, because of his attitude and stuff like that.
Yeah, because Puck was definitely one of those guys that, you know, you could tell that he didn't care.
He didn't care.
Yeah, you kind of almost thought that he was going to just completely self-destruct himself at some point. As it turns out, he didn't, because, like, yeah, that same, like, reunion show, I don't remember if he even showed up, but I remember that they did, like, a show where, like, I think he even has, like, kids now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he kind of, like, calmed down a bit. I mean, I forget what he's doing now. This is years ago, probably 10 years ago that they did this, probably at this point.
And it's weird, like, I wonder if they got them on Blu-ray, like, all the seasons. Probably got to go to MTV.com and check it out. Because I would love to see those seasons again and then see where everybody was at after the reunion and then, like, see where they at right now.
That would be pretty interesting. Do, like, a new one. I mean, because I think the closest thing they have is that they have, like, the challenge, which they just bring out like everyone from Real World and just put them in like crazy games.
Oh, the Real World episodes. Rules Challenge.
Yeah.
Road Rules was good too.
I like Road Rules, and you know, there's a lot of unique characters. I call them characters, you know, you kind of get that point.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of unique people that came out of that one. Oh, God, what was that tall, goofy guy's name? I know he's been in a couple of challenges, too, and not last too long because he's not all that great. But, because he was fun to watch.
Did you know The Miz was on it, on Road Rules?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's how he,
Now,
that's how we got big now.
There is an editor at Destructoid.com, Jonathan Holmes. He was on Road Rules, and they met. They were on the same season together, and like later on, like I think like last year or sometime at E3, they see each other and caught up, and they're just like they was asked, "Do they remember each other?" And they said, "Yeah," and they got to talking and stuff. It was like really cool. I'm like, "Wow."
Oh, nice. Oh, so, yeah, I don't think I saw that.
And we didn't even talk about the PC thing that we were supposed to be talking about from yesterday.
Oh, that's right. Whoops.
Well, it's a bonus episode. Like I said, it's a big open discussion. Yeah, I'll probably do PC later because we got to get on with the show. That was a good discussion. Yeah. So,
I had my wife come in and ask me, what's taking so long? What are you guys doing?
Okay. The way that it is going to go, because I got notes and stuff, I am going to play music, so you could just, like rest. And when I say that I'm playing this song, we'll be right back, you could go take a break, like go to the bathroom. You don't have to say nothing, just go and go to the bathroom. And I could fade in. Even if you're not back, I could still just start talking about what's the next thing's going to be. So it's going to be my intro music. We're going to talk about Atari, more music, Sega, music break, TurboGrafx-16, music break, Neo Geo, music break, arcades. I'm going to be giving some thank yous for all the people who attended, so you will get a thank you. Do my email or Twitter, and then end it with a good song. And the ending song is just for this whole month of October for this beauty of video games, the project. So I'm going to stop the podcast. I'm going to name another file for it so we could be fresh and ready to go, so we could be a little bit more professional. I know people gonna hear and just be like, okay, they went from underwear to zombies to hip hop to rock to reality shows.
Just all over the place.
Over the place. And that's what I kind of like the open discussions. I like having those. Those are real good. So I'm going to stop it right here, and we should be ready for the show. So just give me a few seconds.
All right.